Welcome to Roots Pod, an audio production of Roots Blog, a member of the Rootscast Broadcast Network. This is Aaron with Peter and John. Once again, John is back from his travels in Europe, during which he was described by various government agencies as, quote, a person of interest. Glad he's back on home soil and back with us to talk about the Oakland Roots. We had recorded what I would describe as a very normal podcast, very typical for the Roots Blog network of podcasts, in which we discussed Oakland's one-all draw at Detroit City, where two of the three of us, myself and John, praised Oakland for their performance. Thought it was unlucky they didn't get more than one goal. And also were a bit dumbfounded at yet another horrific defensive mistake at the end of the game that cost them the 3 points. We then discussed how the playoff picture doesn't look too bad and had been maybe thrown into flux by Rick Chance's firing from Phoenix Rising. And then the next day, we learned that our very own Oakland Roots had placed our head coach, Juan Guerra, on administrative leave, which is a heck of a term to describe putting someone or taking someone off the bench. Let me tell you that I'm glad that we have confirmation that it has to do with the Phoenix job now, because I was worried for a minute there. But it basically rendered obsolete everything we had done. So you got to miss all of that. You also got to miss the sound of one of my neighbors throwing chalk at my house to celebrate the first day of school. That was pretty interesting. It was a young child, and, you know, God bless him. And I'm not sure he even realized that someone might be living in this building. It was just, you know, the building next to his backyard, because he looked like he'd seen a ghost when my face appeared in the window. I hope he's doing better, honestly. But let's start with the big news of the week, maybe of the season at this point, actually. Juan Guerra, after 25 games on the sidelines, is that right? I have that. 25 games on the sidelines, nearly half of which were draws, improbably, has been placed on administrative leave by the club after he was approached by Phoenix Rising in what has been described to us as a disruptive manner. I would like to know more about what that means personally, but disruptive manner. And so I guess this goes back about a month, this story does. We have heard rumblings for quite some time that Rick Chance's job might be in trouble. I think, John, you had given them some credence, but I at least had thought that was a little ridiculous. This is a guy who's like Arizona through and through and has been wildly successful. One bad year can't possibly be enough to take him out of that position. But lo and behold, he is let go. And Rising announced that they will be working with an interim for the remainder of the season. And I think we all thought that was sort of the end of it as far as Oakland was concerned, except for the fact that we're fighting with Rising for the last playoff spot and have to play them in a couple of weeks. But it was not, in fact, the end of the road for this story with respect to Oakland, because here we are. It looks like maybe Phoenix is going to at least extend an offer to Juan, and he seems receptive to it. So, John, just why don't you give us the rundown of what we know, like the hard stuff, what we know about what's gone down and why we are where we are. Let's set the scene for us.
Yeah. Wednesday, Chance gets canned, sacked, as we say in this sport, I guess. And then Thursday... And then Thursday happens, and my initial reaction was, oh, this has to be Phoenix. I know there was a lot of mixed reactions, you guys included, saying administrative leave, this must have been something terrible. And my first thought was, you know, it had to be Phoenix. It reminded me of, you know, I correlated this back to Waffle and Soya Takahashi announcing their abrupt leave from the team in the thick of a playoff race, mind you. That's when Jordan Farrell was in. Jordan Farrell still is in control. He's the technical director.
I think remind everybody of that. So they were regular contributors on last year's team and sort of announced at the end of the season prior to the playoffs that they would not be coming back for the next season. And then we didn't see hide nor hair of them during the playoffs. And it was a bit weird. I think we found out afterwards that they had both actually left the team and returned to their home countries before the playoffs had begun.
Mm-hmm. It was during the season. So
I also want to interrupt John here and point out that, like, the fact that he immediately thought that this was Phoenix suggests to me that John is telling us he has sources that are too secret to share with me and Aaron.
Well, no, no, not that at all. You know, I remember a month ago, USL News and Rumors, small Twitter page, hit it nail on the head. He put that Guerra was a candidate for the job alongside Mark Briggs. We talked about this in the previously recorded episode that no one's going to get to hear, that, you know, Briggs seemed like a lateral move. While we would be surprised, I said those words exactly, that I would be surprised if Guerra took the job in his first season as a head coach.
That's really big of you to admit that you had made that kind of an analytical error just 24 hours before the rest of this dropped. you're freezing cold taking yourself right there.
I have no over pride here. But, you know, then, you know, reached out, did some digging, and then we were told that Phoenix had, in fact, been in contact with Juan without permission while under contract. Those words exactly.
You mentioned the without permission there. Let's just stop and talk about that for a second. Yeah. Because I think a number of us probably immediately thought, you know, what are the tampering rules here? Without permission, I mean, permission seems that if you're going to have... If you're going to require permission, if permission is going to be something that is necessary, it's got to be written down somewhere, I think. And the best we can tell at the moment is that there's no explicit anti-tampering rule in the United States, the United Soccer League, which is pretty consistent with how sort of Wild West this whole league is. And so it's our understanding that there was no ask here. Mm-hmm. But there's also no, there might not be any rule against that. It's just sort of incredibly unsporting. And to do it in the middle of a playoff race where these two teams are competing is got to raise some eyebrows.
And talking to Owe Nevins, Phoenix Rising supporter, who's covered this league quite some time, you know, plus 6 years, I think, you know, he, in our discussions, he said, you know, there are sometimes rules that aren't in public view because, as you said, it is a Wild West of a league. Nothing is clear. The USL doesn't release everything for us to see. So,
well, yeah, on that point, I would expect, I don't know how the rest of you feel, but I would expect if we're going to see an anti-tampering rule, it's going to be in either the league bylaws or maybe in, like, I'm sure that each club has an agreement with the league when you join. There's got to be something signed between the clubs, the franchises, and the league itself. And so if it's going to be anywhere, it's going to be there. And none of that is out there. Like, none of it.
So as the days go by, it does seem less and less likely that the USL would make a ruling on this. I guess time will tell. Maybe they're holding it for the off season. But as the hours go, as the days go, it seems like it's fair play. Unless Roots... Oh. This watertight in his contract, which might not
have right. been. So I guess, I mean, I think fair play. A couple of points, I guess, to respond to that is, you know, just because there's not a rule against it doesn't mean it's necessarily above board. You know, we're still talking about effectively competing businesses. And, you know, I think there is perhaps... something there that's way outside of my wheelhouse, but I wouldn't be surprised if... Go ahead, Peter.
I mean, surely, like Guerra has a contract with the Roots, and I assume that that contract says something about mid-season transfers to another club. I would guess... I mean, I literally just guessing, if I were writing that contract, I would want it to mention something about specifically negotiating with a club against you, whom you are competing.
Well, on that point, we got nothing concrete here, but what we're hearing is that there's actually nothing. There might not have been any language in the contract about that. And in fact, there might have been language that allowed him to walk at any point, which I don't think that necessarily, again, this is not something that I regularly think about or opine upon, but I don't think that that necessarily forecloses, you know, some kind of claim related to interference with contract. But it does seem like part of the reason why Phoenix might have felt fine just asking him with one third of the season to go is that, like, from a contractual standpoint, it looks like there's no impediment. And speculating further about that, and I'm, you know, pulling this from very deep in my nether regions, from the sort of place where this area gets its housing policy or its policing policy. But Oakland was, there were what, three or four matches last year that were either behind closed doors or with very few fans at Las Positas. In addition to the fact that they had to order another turf midseason, they probably had to pay for those rearrangements of those matches. I'm sure that you know, wasn't just included in their contract with the Peralta Community College District. It's probably over $500,000 in revenue at the very least that they missed out on last year because of that debacle. And I just wonder if, you know, you put that together with the fact that we have timing is a big piece of evidence here. We have reason to believe that Juan wasn't Oakland's first choice to replace Farrell this season. I wonder if maybe this is one thing he got because, you know, the salary itself wasn't as competitive as it might be at the end of this year after they have 17 home games. You know, I mean, that is a huge chunk of revenue they're going to have at the end of this year that they did not have last year. Also, they're paying for housing for most of the players, and I would guess that this club's housing allotment costs more than every single other club in the USL's. You know, speaking from personal experience on that one, I'm just guessing. It seems likely.
There's no way anyone can compete with Oakland in that regard. I mean, like San Diego, sort of, but they at least have suburbs.
Right. So I just wonder. That is pure speculation. But it goes to this question, like, why now? What in the world is happening right now that made this so the kind of thing that they decided to do, you know, in such a critical part of the season? Who knows? That just seems like, to me, if you're just trying to explain it, that's kind of where my thoughts go. But
you mean what made Phoenix want to do this right now?
Yeah.
So I wonder because since the beginning of July, Phoenix have one win, two losses, and five draws. And let me tell you, Juan Gid is not breaking that streak for you.
That's. I mean, we did speculate perhaps on the unreleased version of this pod that maybe Phoenix decided to make this move now because they have a bit of a break in the schedule. They have a 2 week break here where it's an opportunity for an interim to come in and, you know, redo some things, you know, maybe they change the voice up in the locker room and whatnot. But the immediate start of the search and I guess the immediate finish of the search is somewhat shocking. I mean, that's the other side of this, right, is that they can be as disruptive as they want coming into the picture, but this isn't truly disruptive to Oakland unless Juan is receptive to their overtures. So I think we can probably surmise that there was at least some degree of acceptance there. And I guess John, English John, you had reported, I think, that there were a couple of canceled team meetings this week and maybe there was some disruption to the team's schedule in preparation for the next couple of weeks of games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was told that it was an awkward week of practice, you know, huddled discussions from the coaching staff, multiple people, and it led to canceled team meetings for different positions groups. So that tells me that, you know, the wheels were quickly turning on this, things really ramping up. I don't think that this was the first Juan heard from Phoenix, just based off of that report a month ago that maybe some feelers were sent out back then, and you know, Juan may have responded positively, and then the wheels quickly turned, almost like how he came to Oakland, as you mentioned. He was not the first choice. Roots reached out to him on, I think, Christmas Day or the day after, and he was signed, what, before New Year's? Before,
yeah, it was December 20th, I think, when we reported it. Yeah.
Yeah, so they reached out to him. 5 days later, he was signed. So it's kind of a similar situation, except he was already under contract. So
that's the sort of decisiveness we sort of wish the team played with at times this year, right there.
I don't understand why Charlie Dennis needed to catch that stray.
Oh, hey, I didn't say who I was talking about. So let's, I guess the big question, right? The two big questions at this point are, who is Noah Delgado? Who is going to lead the team now? And how are the players responding? Because, you know, this feels like the kind of situation that could go in one of two directions. Either there's sort of a rally around the flag moment, and this, you know, these guys really get it together and start putting together the results that their play has justified so far this season, or, you know, it's chaos. I mean, I'm struggling to think of another time when a team in the middle of a late season playoff push had to change managers like this. I can't think of a situation. So let's start with the Noah Delgado question. John, what do we know about the new interim head coach of the Oakland Roots?
Well, starting off, which is probably the most impressive bullet point on his resume, is he's an assistant coach for the El Salvador national team. Spent time alongside Hugo Perez, who is a very accomplished mind in this game, especially the Bay Area, as a soccer guy. I think he's connected to Eric Yamamoto, so you can see the connection there. Local guy, grew up in Fremont. As I was told, he has a 510 phone number, which the club feels is very important.
It's important.
Yeah, but a long career. You know, he's bounced around. He 5 years on the Puerto Rican national team as a midfielder, 9 goals in 25 appearances, former MLS Super Draft pick. So he has experience, especially in the United States and the international level, which I'm sure some guys will look up to. But he's been around. He's a holdover from Jordan Farrell's staff. 2021, I think, was his when he was brought on under Farrell. I get maybe the previous staff too. That's another discussion too, is how many coaches this team has had over the last 3 years.
It has become noticeable. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much you can read into it, but it has become noticeable that this is now the second season in the USL when we can't get from start to finish with the same guy in charge.
It's like a Spinal Tap drummer situation, which I think we had previously accused our goalkeeper situation as being, and I just want to apologize to our goalkeeping division. They have been surpassed by the management.
Yeah. And that's not to say that I think Juan wasn't the guy for the job. I do think Juan was an up-and-coming manager in this league. Roots really went out on a limb to give a guy his first coaching job, and I don't think we could have foreseen Rick Shantz getting the boot. Maybe if Juan does he leave Phoenix? I mean, it seems that, you know, his eyes were elsewhere. I mean, clearly, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it does speak highly of him that Phoenix came for him immediately after they lost their head coach. So let's talk about the squad. We have in past episodes talked about what it might look like if we give Juan a full offseason. At the same time, if you look at the squad, I mean, his fingerprints are all over it. So we had five guys, as I understand it, on two-year deals from last season. Jose Hernandez, Akeem Ward, Memo Diaz, Tarik Morad, and Max Hornstill. And then six others were brought back from the last season before Juan was hired. Lindo Mofeka, Taylor Bailey, Paul Blanchett, Matias Fusore, Kai Green, Ariel Mumba, and Johnny Rodriguez. And then after he was signed, we brought on Funmayor, Rito, Formella, Chewy, and Emra, and Jonane came back. And then add to that Charlie Dennis, Danny Barbier, and Juan Carlos Azucar. And then the three loanees, Benny Diaz, Otar Carlson, and Mikael Janssen. I don't know how much his presence on the staff affected the three loanees. It almost certainly didn't have any effect on the two Venezia loanees. Benny Diaz, maybe, because it was obviously a decision to go out and get another keeper. But, you know, if you look at who we had on the squad before he signed, right? Bailey was, they loaned out Bailey and brought him back because they lost Benny Diaz. Kai Green is gone. You know, he has been actually a pretty solid central defender for Monterey Bay, who is uncomfortably close to Oakland in the standings now. Mumba's gone now to the Columbus Crew developmental side. Akeem Ward is gone to, what is RGV, I think? Somebody else in the USL.
Yeah, he scored against San Antonio this weekend.
Very nice goal.
What a guy.
Oh, thank God we let him go right before the only manager who doesn't think he's good leaves.
It does make Mumba's departure sting a little bit more. I mean, that's a guy I think if you had asked, I would say if you'd asked most Roots fans at the beginning of the season, based on last season's performance, who do you expect to have more minutes this season, Ariel Mumba or Johnny Rodriguez? I'd guess the majority probably guess Ariel Mumba. Now, I mean, what a guy does in the offseason, we don't have any insight into that, and maybe Johnny's work in the offseason was exemplary, but it has been kind of shocking that Mumba never got on the pitch, that Memo Diaz didn't see that much of the pitch, that Ward saw very little of the pitch. So anyway, one of the things I think is shown by just looking at the timeline of signings that there actually are a lot of guys who from on the surface look like Juan's guys. And it's hard to say what's going to happen now, but John, so what have we heard about the tone in the locker room, the attitude of the locker room, the environment around the team right now?
Well, to circle back a little bit there, I want to touch on Mumba. I mean, the guy was transferred 6 days before this stuff happened. You know, it tells me that the front office did not expect Juan to leave. Maybe Juan didn't expect himself to leave at the time either. You don't make these moves without the future in mind. And I can't imagine that people within the team didn't bring up that report a month ago saying, hey, Phoenix, this report says Phoenix is interested in you. What are your thoughts? What is your feedback? You know, and then a month later or 3 weeks later, you trade one of your younger guys. I mean, you earlier in the season, you send Akeem Ward, you send Kai, you're planning for the future. Anyways, yeah, the mood in practice, I was told while those huddle discussions were going on, was tense. It was tense. And then the news happens and what I was told is boys got a chip on their shoulder. You know, they're pissed off, quote unquote. That's what you want going into the end of the season. You know, you hope it translates into connectivity and playing well in a system. You know, you could have a chip on your shoulder and be pissed off all you want. Doesn't mean you're going to score goals. You know, I was told that they're taking it better than people anticipated. You know, we could take that at face value and just hope for the best. But at least people aren't sulking. So, you know, it's the right energy we're going to need for these last nine games to be pissed off and take it to these teams. Starts on Wednesday against a very tough opponent. So we'll see.
That is true. The immediate stretch of games for the interim is rough. We have San Diego, right? San Diego, Sacramento, San Antonio. Maybe the three best teams in the West, easily three of the top four. That was going to be rough anyway. At the same time, Oakland has played all of these teams to a draw so far, so we know we can hang with them. The squad has the talent to match up with these guys, but those were never going to be easy games, and this has really this throws a real wrench into things. So I don't know, John, you've been in touch with more people about this. Do you expect to see a team that sort of rallies around itself and puts together a stretch of really good performances? Is that kind of how you think the season is about to unfold?
It's how I hope the season is about to unfold. Wednesday is going to say a lot because, you know, we don't even know what coaches are going to be on the sidelines. We're not even sure who Delgado's first assistant is going to be. I would not expect Marcos Reyna to return. I was told good things about Peter Davis, the goalkeeper coach. I think he's bought in. But after that, you know, it's kind of, we're going to see what we get on Wednesday. I hope they pan to the sideline to give us some clues over here because we're guessing a little bit.
I just looked up Marcos Reyna on Instagram and I have nothing to report.
That's the kind of hard-hitting journalism we're known for here.
This run of games sucks, and it culminates in Phoenix, which is garbage, just absolutely garbage.
And, you know, we talked a couple of times about how interesting it was going to be seeing Guetta coach against his old club, and at this point it looks like it will actually not happen.
Or he will be coaching for what we did not think would be his former club.
That's right. It's true. Oh, boy.
I mean, we're all question marks. I mean, we can talk more about the players right now. We don't know who's going to come back next season. You know, Guerra makes his moves. You know, as you mentioned earlier, Rito, Azucar, Fuenmayor come to mind. I was told they're on one-year contracts. So where I'm standing right now, I'm not expecting any to come back, and I'm expecting Juan to swoop up one of our star players this year, Mr. Eduardo Rito.
I swear to God, who I'm most sad to see go, Eduardo Rito is the top, and it is a mile of distance before you get to the manager.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, I mean, it doesn't look like that's going to happen before the end of the season at the very least. So we got that going for us. We have talked many, many times about, hey, is this maybe the time when they start to throw some wrinkles into the system? Is this maybe the time when we see a different shape out of this squad? And one of the other things we've talked about is that it has felt at times like this squad is, I mean, they've got their system. They've got what I'll call Juan's system. It seems very well drilled. In fact, it feels a lot like they stick to it even when they need to be deviating from it. When the moment calls for, you know, a moment of individual creativity, we don't see it, but we do see a team that is very well drilled in the system that the coach wants to see. Do you think we see something new now?
I'm leaning no, you know, because you want to keep most of everything the same. Delgado was still a coach on the staff. So I don't think he's going to just blow it up and say, you know, 9 games left, we're going to do it my way. I mean, maybe he throws some of his own wrinkles in there, notably defensively. But yeah, it's hard to say. But I'd be leaning to minimal changes.
Well, you know, it's one of the things that's so bizarre about the fact that we kind of assume if Guetta's out, that his guys are out, because it's Reyna who you would think is the person who's, you know, the assistant who wants to one day be a manager himself. and is like chomping at the bit to implement his strategy, all the things where he thinks Geta isn't doing it quite right, you know? And I don't know if Delgado was that guy. He's, you know, he's an assistant manager on a couple of teams. It's just like he was not expecting to be putting together the strategy going into the San Diego Loyal game. So I don't know. I mean, even though I wanted Geta to maybe futz with the three center backs, I don't know that I change things when there's no time to prepare.
Fair enough. I guess part of me just really would like to see Memo Diaz back on the field. That's just hope. That's just me hoping.
Yeah. I mean, we certainly could see that. That was a wrinkle that Guerra played on a few occasions, was Memo sending long balls into the area. So maybe Delgado prefers that. Maybe there are certain concepts to the system that he does have preferences to. So, you know, we'll know on Wednesday.
So let's talk about the playoff picture real quick here to wrap, put a bow on this whole thing. In the ludicrous amount of time that Oakland had off before the Detroit City game, one of the nice things was that nobody ahead of them really took advantage of it. El Paso Locomotive just continues to free fall. Las Vegas Lights didn't pick up too many points. The Galaxy didn't pick up too many points. If anything happened, it's that the bottom started coming up at Oakland. Monterey Bay now has 29 points. Phoenix Rising also have 29 points. They both have a game in hand on Oakland, who is sitting at 30. Unfortunately, Vegas finally did sort of get off their schneid. They beat Sacramento Republic at home. On the other hand, Danny Trejo was signed away from Lights to LAFC, which seems like a pretty big blow to them. That's good. At the same time, they did get a win. They are 7 points clear of Oakland at the moment. I mean, that's just a few results, but God, who knows how many results are in this team right now. Colorado Springs continues to be in something of a free fall, but they arrested it long enough to get a 1-0 win over, of all teams, the Tampa Bay Rowdies. And they now probably have enough to qualify. We're pretty sure that New Mexico and Sacramento are getting in. So, you know, it's still all to play for. Everything's in front of them, but they've got to start getting results. And as we've alluded to here, it could get worse before it gets better. I mean, the end of the season does not look particularly intimidating, but the next four matches could be brutal.
You look at the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, the 9 remaining games, you could pretty easily count to 9 or 10 points with no upsets, but only one of those really comes in the next four games, which is going to make things feel really grim. I mean, Sacramento have never beaten Oakland. They look really good. And I have less confidence than I did literally a week ago.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, come out and show life against San Diego. I don't expect the Roots to do anything against San Diego. But if they come out and play like they mean it, then I think that they have a chance. I mean, like you said, El Paso are in complete free fall. I'm never going to believe in the Las Vegas Lights. Like, it just doesn't matter what happens. I will never believe in that team. And Galaxy 2, didn't Galaxy 2 lose to Loudon or someone absolutely trash?
They lost to Loudon. To be fair, they were on the road against Loudon, but yeah, they lost to Loudon.
No, they drew Charleston yesterday. That was the result I was looking for. At home.
Yeah, they were down 1-0 for a while.
Yeah, like they almost lost to Charleston. So, you know, the Roots have some easy fixtures at the end. It's just this next run of four is going to be devastating. We're great. Beat Sacramento and Phoenix. And then, I think we make the playoffs if we beat Sacramento and Phoenix.
Yeah, they just need a couple of 3-point results. That's the thing that they've been missing. They're going to need to beat New York Red Bulls 2. They're going to need to beat Hartford Athletic. They need to hold the fort down against Birmingham Legion. They have a great opportunity to get points against Colorado Springs Switchbacks. Again, they're probably in the playoffs, but they don't appear capable of doing much right now. And let's hope they don't figure it out before September the 24th. They get San Antonio at home. That was a draw in San Antonio. Maybe they can get the extra goal here at Laney. And then there is what should be a very spicy matchup against Phoenix Rising. I mean, that was always going to be, I mean, that's been a six-pointer for some time now. That is now a six-pointer with a little bit of spice added to it. So nothing has changed, but boy, it feels like everything changed.
If we can move on from the end of the season, I do have one last note.
Go ahead.
Which is that I think we talked several podcasts ago, which is probably like 6 weeks, about a rival team having a red card sponsorship from Wendy's, I think. Mm.
Yes.
And in the Roots' last home match against Phoenix Rising, in fact, a player was sent off in second half stoppage time. And so in a deal that is, in a loose sense, sponsored by Wendy's, on our next podcast, I will announce the winner among people who retweet the podcast episode tweet. I will Venmo you $20 that you agree to spend at Wendy's.
You hear it, guys.
That's binding, people. That is a binding.
It's like advertisement, only I'm losing money.
Well, not to be all doom and gloom, but I do think that we have a pretty good shot at some points in the next two matches just because they've proven that they can hang with these teams. It's going to be interesting, though. So we'll be back after the San Diego Sacramento week with hopefully a lot of interesting insight into how the rest of this season is going to unfold. Until
I will absolutely not be preparing for those either.
Oh, God. No one expects you to. Until then, up the roots.
Up the roots.